It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and although right now fall colors are prominent in the landscape, it's time to start thinking about the colors we'd like to see in the spring. We're going to talk about spring blooming bulbs this hour. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at ISU. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here today. And Richard, I have to bring up, you were making fun of my frost prediction just a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't do that.
I think I have the tape to prove it. But here we are. I mean, we had frost across, I think, the entire state this week.
Pretty much. Maybe the southeast corner might have escaped, but pretty much.
All right.
But it's pretty typical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that probably put an end to a lot of production in gardens. But what else does a frost really shut down?
It's mainly those things that are basically frost tender. Some of your annual plants like impatiens, begonias, they just can't withstand a light frost or freeze. Things like tomatoes and peppers, again, in the garden. But other things are perfectly fine yet. Some of your perennials are still fine, your mums, your asters, they can handle that. So only those things that are basically frost tender.
And, of course, mid-October is a really typical time for that kind of frost.
It is, yeah.
All right, unless we get lucky, which we didn't this year. Although, what a lovely weekend we have ahead of us. And a perfect time for planting bulbs, which is something a lot of us should be thinking about this mm-hmm. time of year. And, I mean, Cindy, I know that, of course, once you plant bulbs, there are some that will come up again and again. But this really is something we need to think about every year, right?
This is something we need to think about every year because there's always places for more bulbs or there's always things to do with extra bulbs for forcing, even indoors. This is really inexpensive when you look at the grand scheme of thing in landscaping, and it has a really big impact on the landscape in the spring. And, of course, you know, your love of the landscape, because by spring we're really looking forward to having some of those bulbs in bloom.
Right. I think spring bulbs are really, mm-hmm. really good for everybody's psyche mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. they finally start coming up out of the ground. And I know at places like Ryman Gardens and on the Iowa State University campus, other campuses around the state, after bulbs bloom in the spring, they get dug up so that
right.
they start their displays fresh. Now, most homeowners don't do that. So if you have a place where you've had tulips or daffodils or something like that the year before, you want to make sure that you have them there again. Do you recommend trying to plant the same kind in the same place? Or how do you manage that?
If you want tulips and you want tulips to bloom beautifully in your garden every year, then you need to replant them frequently. Do you have to plant them every year? Not necessarily, but most of the hybrid tulips are not long-lived, and they need to be replanted every 2 or 3 years. And you'll notice when it doesn't bloom as well 1 year as it did the year before. Other bulbs like daffodils, you plant them once, and they keep coming back again and again and again, and you're just adding to because they will be there for decades.
How do you plan before you plant your bulbs?
Oh, it's tough because I'm getting to the point where there's not too many places that I can plant more bulbs that I'm not digging up already bulbs that I have.
Right.
So I think that's where you start, is that you know you've marked where the bulbs are, and then you look for those open spots or those spaces where you want to draw some attention, where you're looking out of your window or, you know, on the sidewalk up to the front door, that you might have those spaces that you can plant some bulbs. And some bulbs are tiny. I mean, crocus is really readily available. It takes a dozen, 20, 30, 50 of them to having an impact, to really make a nice impact. So you can tuck in a dozen here, a dozen there, and have some nice show.
Richard, how do you plan every fall? Because I know you plant quite a few bulbs every fall, right?
Well, I do some forcing. But as far as the bulbs, I basically look at what I have available as far as space. And I tend to go with the daffodils because they are long-lived. You basically provide them with a well-drained soil and at least 6 hours of direct sun. And if you don't cut them back prematurely as far as the foliage, they'll come back for many, many years. And in fact, the clump gets bigger. And the other nice thing is that the deer and the rabbits do not like them. So you don't have to worry about that. So they're relatively maintenance-free once you have them established. And they're actually quite diverse as far as maybe the forms, the size, mainly yellows and oranges and whites, but they're still quite diverse.
When you go to the store in the fall, the variety of bulbs can be a little dizzying, kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. It's easy to possibly overspend on them.
Always.
Right? When you're looking at those displays of bulbs, what kinds of things do you think it's important to think about?
I think a size, as far as the size, how big are they? I mean, you'll sometimes see them at discount stores, and you look at the actual size. They're not that great. They're not that big. The other thing I look for is, do I see any signs of rotting? And sometimes you will see that in occasion where you'll see maybe a mold or something growing on the bulbs. Not a good sign. So I'm looking for nice, healthy bulbs, a nice size, and also varieties that I think should perform well in the area.
Are there any things that you really try to avoid? Because there are always new and different bulbs. It's fun to experiment. Are there flags that make you think, oh, maybe I don't want to try this kind?
Not really. I might not like maybe the color or something of that nature. There are some things I don't like. For example, those tulips that have green stripes on them, I'm not really fond of those, so I might stay away from those. But otherwise, I'd like to try new ones, too.
And, Cindy, you were talking about, oh, maybe lining the sidewalk and something like that. And, of course, you can use these bulbs in so many different ways. If you're not somebody who is going to necessarily, especially with tulips, do an update every year, do you have ideas for ways to plant that are going to look good, even if, you know, because a straight row, if something doesn't go
it looks like a straight row, yeah. So plant them in groups or clumps. I worked for a gentleman that would kind of throw them out or throw them on the ground in the area that he wanted them, and then wherever they landed, that's where they got planted, because then it looks more like a drift instead of looking like these nice little rows in your garden. So use, you know, the clump or massing techniques where there's, you know, a dozen over here and there might be 20 over there and there's only two or three maybe here, you know, tucked in everywhere, so that it's a little informal. And they're not in straight rows. They're not lined up like soldiers in a row.
All right. So you're not going to look at the display and see the problem. You're going to look and see
the color.
And
the bloom. Nice. And you think about bulbs, too. Even daffodils and tulips, they're signs of early spring, but they won't be there, you know, forever. They won't be there in summer. So think about what's going to take over that space in summer as well. So that's why they work really well in the places where you've planted annuals or those late blooming perennials are nearby.
And Richard, I know you have some rules about odd and even numbers. You have some advice as far as whether to plant an odd or even number of bulbs in a space?
The number really isn't that important as long as they're in a mass. So if you have 20 or 21 in a mass, it doesn't really matter. You want to put them in a mass, though, so they're more effective. That's the main thing.
All right. Now, we're talking about just tossing the bulbs on the ground, planting them where they are. A lot of people love that naturalized look until they start mowing.
Right.
So give us some advice about that as well, because you don't want to hate your daffodils once the grass starts to grow.
Never put them in the lawn.
No, don't put them in the lawn. The only thing that really works well in the lawn for bulbs and that might work well are the really early bloomers like squill or crocus. And then you have to be a little late in mowing your lawn because you really need that foliage to photosynthesize and put some energy back into the bulb.
Well, for a lot of us, being late in mowing the lawn is no trouble
at
all. And speaking of procrastinators, okay, right now is a great time to plant bulbs, but how long do we have?
Until the ground freezes.
Right.
So that could be possibly as late as early December. But that's the key. As long as the ground is not frozen, you can plant. just realize it may not be very comfortable if it's cold outside, but you can still do it if the ground's not frozen.
October is the perfect time because you've got good selection. The weather's, you can usually find a couple of nice days to do it. So try not to procrastinate on this one because it, yeah, once the ground is frozen, then you're forced to force them indoors.
And what is your favorite method for planting?
What I typically do is go out with a tarp and a shovel and actually excavate a fairly large area. Just remove all the soil, and then I set the bulbs in that trench and then fill it back up. That's what I do.
It depends on how many bulbs I have. Sometimes I have a bulb planter that's, you know, with a foot that you kind of just makes a hole, pulls out the soil, and you can put the bulb right in. Sometimes I'll use a shovel for things, the smaller bulbs, so I can kind of create that mass. And then one year I planted over 1,000 bulbs in a bed, and we tilled the whole thing, and we used one of those augers that go on a drill, and it was so much fun.
That does sound fun. Now, of course, you can go to the garden store and you, or in the catalogs, and you see these tools for planting bulbs. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is that worth the investment?
It depends on how many you're planting. If you plan on planting a lot every year, then it is worth the investment. Really, nothing beats a good shovel or a trowel, though. It works just as well.
Well, and if you're doing that, do you need to be concerned? You said don't plant them in the lawn, but do you need to worry that this late in the season you might be killing whatever ground cover you have that grows there?
Well, typically you put these in bare areas, and so you just have to make sure that you don't have any other bulbs in the area. Otherwise, you're going to see most other plants. So that's the biggest concern, is you don't want to plant where you have other spring flowering bulbs already planted.
And if there are others nearby or other things nearby, other perennials, you just be really careful when you're digging. Take it slow and steady, and they all will work well together.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me this hour, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University and Professor in Charge of the Master Gardener Program. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get to the phone line. Suzanne is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I had a question about burning in the spring. Or if I have oak starts and I have lilacs, and if I was actually thinking of putting bulbs in, is there a way I can burn and not kill those things?
You would be burning for what purpose?
To clear out some pretty thick, it's mainly fescue.
Right. I think if, as long as the foliage isn't up and the bulbs are planted at the proper depth, and it's
what
usually...
What would be that proper depth?
Well, it depends on the size of the bulb. Those bigger bulbs, like tulips and daffodils, are about 6 to 8 inches deep. I think they would be deep enough, and they would probably not be injured by that. It would have to be burning really early.
Right, because they come up very early,
too. Some of them
do. So I'm not sure how practical it really is, because it would have to be extremely early.
What about the lilac? But I have to somehow, like, trench around it, or it's a ring of lilacs.
Well, again, if you have material that you burn, and you get close, the burning gets close to the lilacs, you could see some damage there, too. I would be kind of cautious on that. Make sure that you have an area around the lilac that would not burn so that there's no damage to that plant.
Now, of course, it's totally depends on luck and how hot the burn goes and
right, all of that.
But do you have kind of a recommendation for how far away?
I would think at least 2 or 3 feet away. It depends upon how much material is there to burn, but... I don't really like burning per se because that can get out of control, but that's their option.
Right. And if you really have something that you want to protect, you would mm-hmm. probably want to back burn starting at that, you know, a couple feet away from the lilac and make sure you are controlling the fire really carefully in that space, I would think, too.
Right.
And the heat that's produced sometimes in that space as well.
All right. Suzanne, thanks a lot for your call. Don is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Don.
Good morning. This is a little off topic, but I've noticed that some of the roadside thistles, the tips seem to be completely absent of any chlorophyll, any green. They're just plain white. I'm not sure I've ever noticed it before, but I'm wondering if you could explain that.
I have seen it in the past. I think there is a disease responsible for that. I can't recall exactly what it was, but yes, I have seen it before, and I believe it's disease-related.
Okay, so probably a lot of people aren't going to be very sad to see.
No, it's not a sad thing. It's not
although
a sad
maybe
thing.
Goldfinches might be sad about it.
They might be, yeah.
But I don't think it's anything that actually is life-threatening to the plant, so they're still going to be there next year.
All right.
So.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Can we maybe harness this power for a little bit of biological control? But all
probably
right.
not.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your call, Don. Next up, Tom in Madrid. Hi, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Hi. Good morning. Yeah. I planted some raspberries about 3 years ago, and the first year in the winter, the rabbits ate them off, and last year they grew up pretty well. But this year they like got out of control, and I was just didn't know how far down to cut them or how. There's a lot of volunteers and so on,
okay.
And I'm just not sure where to go from here.
Now, when you say out of control, you mean what?
Oh, they've just grown so big, and there's so many volunteers. I had like four plants now that they've spread, and they're 8 feet tall, some of them.
Okay.
It's just they're growing like crazy.
And what type of fruit do they produce? Are they producing red fruit, purple fruit, black fruit?
I haven't got any fruit off them yet.
Okay.
This is their third year.
Okay. Well, I guess the first thing I would do would be to make sure the rabbits don't get them again this winter. So you may want to put some wire fencing around them and do that sometime this fall. And then next spring, what I would do is I would go out there and prune them, and I would remove the very small, spindly canes because they're not going to produce much, if anything. And I would leave the larger, fatter canes, leave those. And I would also prune out any dead wood at the top, and I would expect some dead wood on the top. We typically get some winter kill. And so prune that out and then let them go ahead and produce. And when they're done producing by, let's say, midsummer or so, when those canes are done producing, then cut them off at ground level, remove those canes and get rid of them, and let the new canes grow, and then they'll bear next year.
Oh, okay.
All right. Great. Yeah, good luck with that. Thanks
okay,
a lot
thanks
for
a
your
lot.
Call. Have a great day. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We'll answer some email questions here. You can ask your questions at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's one from Christopher. Is it okay to harvest and eat rhubarb this late in the growing season? I don't remember this patch bolting as it's quite young.
Could you? Yes. The actual stalks are still edible. We typically stop harvesting in around mid-June. And the reason for that is, as we harvest in the spring, that does weaken the plant. So we give the plant the rest of the growing season to recover from that. But if you wanted to before that first hard freeze, you could go out there. You could harvest it if you wanted to. It might be fairly woody compared to spring, but you could still do it. It's still edible.
All right. Here's a question from Matthew. I have some gladiolus bulbs that never got planted. What do I need to do to overwinter them since they did not go through a leaf flower cycle? Mm. That doesn't sound good.
No, you
might want to double check and investigate them. They may not.
I would suspect they're dead.
Yeah.
That they have died over time.
And how can you tell?
Well, you could take them out and you could just kind of feel their see if they're solid. I would suspect that they may be kind of hollow, kind of...
Or shriveled.
Shriveled, that mm-hmm. type of thing. But glad you can store for a short time, maybe a few months, but typically not more than a year. They're going to basically, eventually at some point, they're going to kind of shrivel up and basically die. So I would suspect they're dead at this point.
All right. And a follow-up question, well, different question, second question. Do I need to take out my calla lily bulbs because they can't overwinter in Iowa temperatures?
Yes, you do. Typically, you wait till you have a killing frost or freeze, and then you dig them up and you bring them inside. And then you need to store them in a cool, dry place until next spring.
All right. Here's a question from Marlene. We have a large amount of clover in our backyard. We aerated and reseeded the lawn in the middle of September. What should be done to control the clover? We've always had some, which we don't mind, but it has really expanded this year. Also, we used a starter fertilizer on the whole lawn in September.
Well, clover is pretty aggressive. It's fairly common in most lawns, but it is fairly aggressive. If you want to control it, I'd apply a broadleaf herbicide this fall. You have still plenty of time. You can do that probably up till at least early November. And as far as control, 2,4-D by itself will not control white clover. It does a very poor job. You want to have a product that has some other ingredient in it, for example, either MCPP, dicamba, triclopyr. They work fine, but 2,4-D by itself does not control clover.
All right, we've got a whole bunch of lawn questions here. This one's from Earl. I've heard of sowing grass seed in the winter. Is that successfully, and how do you do it?
Well, it's kind of iffy. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Basically, what you would do is go out there probably around Thanksgiving or a little bit after, and you would sow your seed. And what you're counting on is the freezing and thawing of the soil during the winter months to work the seed into the soil. That's what you're counting on. And then you're counting on favorable weather in the spring where you have adequate rainfall. If those two things happen, then you might get some pretty good seed germination in the spring. If not, it may be a total failure. So it can be successful, but oftentimes it's not.
All right. And a second question from Earl. Should the fall broadleaf spraying be done in relationship to the first frost?
Well, actually, a first frost is beneficial in that it kind of signals to the plants, the weeds, that winter is coming. And so they kind of switch gears. And what they're doing in the fall, basically, is the foliage is manufacturing food and sending that food down into the root so the plant can survive the winter. So if you apply a herbicide at that point, the actual foliage absorbs the herbicide, and it moves down into the root along with the food, so you have this downward movement, and you get very good control.
All right, and I think this one's definitely a related question from Steve in Iowa City. My lawn is becoming infested with crabgrass, quackgrass, goosegrass, creeping Charlie, and other assorted weeds.
Wow.
What would you recommend that I should do now to promote a healthier grass lawn for next spring?
Boy, it might be it might be time to do a total redo where you go out maybe next year in early to mid-summer and possibly spray the whole thing with Roundup and kill everything, and then reseed in late summer. Because if you have all those, and let's say you have more weeds than grass, it's probably something that you can't salvage with herbicides, and you might as well just start over.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bob is on the line in Madison County. Hi, Bob.
Yes, I have harvested some purple coneflower seeds this fall, mm-hmm. and I was calling for advice on planting them for optimal germination and results.
You can plant those. You can start those or sow those seeds indoors. I would probably recommend that you hold off on sowing them right now because there's not a whole lot that you can do with them. They can't go outside until probably next spring. So if you're going to sow them indoors, maybe put them in a refrigerator for a month, and then after Christmas, Sow them in flats of soil, just like you would sow your tomato seeds or pepper seeds. Keep them moist. They'll start to germinate, and then you can transplant them into larger containers and then plant them outdoors, actually, in spring.
I was looking for a larger number of plants than okay. just what I would get individually. And so would it be optimal then just to sow them in the spring on the ground after I'd worked the ground?
Sure. You can do that as well. I would prepare what we call like a little seedling bed or a seedling area so that, you know, it's fairly level. It's got good soil, good drainage. And then you can scatter the seeds in that particular area, cover it lightly, and then make sure that you maintain a kind of a moist site as those seedlings start to germinate. And you may have to protect them as well from birds or other things that might want to try and dig up the seed and eat it.
So covering them with straw might be a good idea.
It might be a great idea. Mm-hmm. And that'll help conserve the moisture as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, we've got Mary in Johnston. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a lily of the valley from my mother's, and it's got a whole lot of weeds in it, mm-hmm. and I want to start over. Can I dig those up somehow this fall and keep them stored, or shall I wait until the spring?
I think I'd wait and do that in the spring early. Just go out there, dig them up. Lily of the valley is a tough plant, so I don't think you should have any problem doing that, but I'd go out early in the spring and try.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next up, Ann in Des Moines. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. I have large clumps of daffodils that I planted 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They bloomed great the first year, but the second and third years, I'm just get a couple of blooms, and it's been kind of disappointing.
Hmm.
So I was wondering if I should divide them or if I should put some kind of fertilizer on them this fall.
Hmm.
I definitely am letting the greens, you know, die down by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
My mom taught me that, and so I don't understand why I'm not getting good blooms.
How much sun do they get
after they're done? They get a lot of sun.
Okay, because that's critical, because when they're actually blooming, they have used up all their stored food to produce the foliage and the flowers. And so that...
they get tons of sun.
Okay. They should not need to be divided. Something apparently is wrong, is not favorable, and so they're declining in health, but I can't really figure it out.
Did you still have plenty of foliage?
Tons.
Okay.
Yeah, I have great big, huge clumps of green mm-hmm. with about 3 blooms.
Okay.
In the first year, I had probably 20, 30 blooms
okay.
in each clump.
And they were planted 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe after 15 years, they might need to be dug up and divided. But after 2 or 3 years,
right,
that should not be necessary.
That's
so I'm thinking there must be something that is simply not very favorable. Because if they had favorable growing conditions, they would remain strong and vigorous. But for some reason, they have declined in health to the point where they're simply so weak they can no longer flower. But I can't think of the reason offhand.
I wonder if the bulbs are bad, because I have really old ones in there that they're still blooming great. So
okay.
in the exact same location.
Well, I think what I would do.
I wonder if I should dig them up.
Well, I think what I would do is if they do the same thing next spring, I would be inclined to dig up one or two and check on the condition of the bulb. Are they rotting for some reason? Is there something wrong that I can see? So I'd be inclined to wait and see what they do next spring. And if they do not flower, I would dig up a few and check on the condition of the bulb itself to see if they might have some type of bulb rot or something, and therefore that's why they're declining.
Do you think she should plant some new ones this year, so a kind of a control group?
As a comparison?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably a wise. You have the opportunity and you have the time.
Then you'll have some daffodils in the spring.
You will have some daffodils. I might avoid this if you know what the cultivar is. I might avoid the cultivar and try something different.
All right, Anne. Thanks a lot for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about the plants in your life. With me this hour, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up on the line, we've got Andy in Cedar Falls. Hi, Andy.
Hi there.
What's your question?
My question is about some asparagus that I relocated this spring. It did produce this summer. However, it's in a kind of a low-lying area next to a river that floods in the spring. And I'm wondering if I can relocate that yet this year, or if the flood will, if water will affect it too much, or.
Well, asparagus definitely does not like a wet, poorly drained site. That's one thing they don't. As far as moving it, you actually moved it this spring already.
Yes.
And now plan to move it again maybe next year. Is that correct?
Well, I wasn't sure if it would be too late in the year to move it this year yet.
Well, if I was going
to
try, if I was going to try moving it, I would be inclined to wait and do it early next spring. I would leave the debris, the plant stalks where they are, so I know exactly where the plants are next spring, and very early next spring, as soon as the ground is workable, I dig them up and move them. Now, I might be inclined actually to buy plants maybe next spring. I say that because you moved them last year. That weakened the plants. You move them again next year, that's going to weaken the plants. And so they've been kind of damaged quite a bit, and I'm not sure if they'll fully recover from that. So you might think about maybe buying new plants next spring as another option.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Andy. Next up, Luke in Ames. Hi, Luke.
Yes, thank you very much for entertaining my call. I had two questions. The first question was, I am extremely concerned with the decimated monarch butterfly population, and I wanted to find a way to propagate some milkweed plant in my yard and where I would go about or how I would go about procuring that and planting that. What would be the best conditions for that? I realize it's a weed out in the country, but I'm not sure how I could best do that in town. Second, I found a very beautiful flower online called a Dutch flag poppy. When I was telling that to one of my gardening friends, she actually told me that they're illegal to grow in Iowa. I don't know if that's true, but it had me concerned. I didn't want to get in trouble with the authorities should I find the seeds and plant it. Would you folks have any advice?
All right, those
questions?
Yeah, let's start with the milkweed question.
With the milkweeds, to begin with, that's a pretty big group of plants, and there are a number of milkweeds are actually quite attractive that do very well in the landscape. For example, there's the butterfly weed, which has orange flowers. It's a very nice perennial. It is a milkweed. It's well-behaved. It's not invasive. It has orange flowers in summer. And you can actually buy the plants at garden centers. The other one, which is very attractive, would be the swamp milkweed, which is a bigger plant, may get to be maybe 4 feet tall, has pink flowers on it. Again, you can actually buy these at garden centers. The swamp milkweed loves a moist site, but it's also fairly drought tolerant once you establish it. The common milkweed is the one that you typically see in roadside ditches. That's kind of a weedy plant in that it's fairly invasive. It spreads by underground roots or rhizomes. As far as establishing these plants, there are a number of companies that do specialize in native plant material. And oftentimes you can either buy seeds or plants from the actual company. As far as seeding, you could do that in the fall, where you basically, if you had these plants in your landscape, you could go out there as the pods were beginning to split open, meaning the pods are mature, the seeds are mature, and then you can break open those seed pods and then remove the seeds and kind of work up an area in your yard, kind of loosen it up with a hoe, and so it's fairly fine. And then you can sow your seed and then kind of rake it into the soil, and that way in the spring the seeds would germinate.
And, I mean, the common milkweed's a pretty tenacious plant.
Oh, it is,
yes. We worked really hard getting rid of them, obviously, that we managed to almost eradicate them from the landscape. Is it okay to stop in a ditch and gather seeds from a common milkweed plant if that's what you want?
I would think so, yeah. They're a pretty common weed. They're not really a wildflower per se. I would say you can do that, yes.
All right. And the second question about the Dutch flag poppy.
Yeah, the Dutch flag poppy. I know there are lots of poppies out there, lots of very different poppies, and some are really attractive landscape ornamentals, and then there are some that, like the opium poppy, which are considered illegal for obvious reasons. I think the Dutch flag poppy doesn't ring any bells, that particular common name, so I would double check the scientific name to find out, you know, with a registered, you know, a list of poppy plants that can and can't be brought into the United States. You're mainly making sure that it's not the opium poppy. And even then, these seeds are, usually poppy seeds are pretty easy to sow. They're plants that grow pretty quickly as well. And really research those conditions that they grow in, because sometimes our heavier soils are not ideal. So, yeah.
All right.
Sorry, I'm not very helpful, I'm afraid.
But he can do a little research.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think technically it's not illegal to grow the poppy. It's illegal to harvest it. But
mm-hmm.
you might not want to take any chances.
No, because they do grow well.
All right. Luke, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got Eldon on the line next in Atkins. Hi, Eldon.
Well, good morning. And I'm going to give you another poppy question.
Mm.
Now, the poppies that grow in Flanders Field row on row,
mm-hmm.
I understand that the Europeans consider them like a dandelion. They're not as welcome as in the great poem about the World War One.
There are a lot of poppies that have a tendency to recede, and some of those smaller poppies will recede in large areas, which is one of the reasons why it can spread through a whole field and create this wonderful effect. But, yes, that's an aggressive spreader and can be considered weedy as well.
I know in Amana, at a certain time of the year, you can see those growing in the, in the areas around the Amanas, in different places, and I asked about them once, and they said, yeah, those are the European poppies, and they have like a checkered black center,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, the red leaves. If I may have another question?
Go ahead. Sure. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I wondered about planting, wildflowers this time of year. Can they be, they normally in nature would drop their seeds this time of year for the next flowering season. Can you do that just by scattering the seeds and then maybe working them in with a shallow drag or rake?
Well, as far as the true native wildflowers and grasses in Iowa, you can sow the seed in the fall. You do have to have good seed-soil contact, so at the very least, you're going to have to kind of maybe cultivate the soil lightly and then sow your seed and then lightly rake it into the actual soil itself.
All right. Eldon, thank you so much for your call. Next up, we've got Sarah in Knoxville. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am new to Iowa, and we just bought a house that has four apple trees.
And it looks like they're done bearing fruit. There's no fruit on them, but I heard there was fruit on them this year. And I'm wondering what I can do to take care of them this fall before the winter. And I'm also wondering what best sources are there to teach a newbie how to take care of apple trees.
I guess the main thing this year would be if you have rabbits in the area, if these are fairly small trees, then you may want to put something around the trunk so the rabbits do not browse on the trunks where they eat the bark, because they can destroy a tree. But beyond that, you don't have to do anything. Next spring, early, before the trees begin to leaf out, you may want to do some pruning. And I guess what I would probably do is, if you have some branches that are basically kind of defects, by that I mean maybe the branch is partially broken, maybe you have a branch that hangs down too low, maybe you have a branch that grows inward rather than outward, I would prune off those defective branches, get rid of them, and leave it at that. The biggest problem with growing apples is that we have a number of insects that will attack the fruit. Things like the apple maggot, coddling moth, plum curculio. And oftentimes, if we don't do anything, the damage to the fruit is so severe that they may not be usable. And so typically we want to try to do some insect control. And the best way to do that is to apply, at some point, a home orchard spray. And typically the most important times to spray the tree basically are around mid-June and early July with a home orchard type spray.
All right, Sarah, thanks a lot for your call. And then there are good books about apples. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are Iowa State University Extension publications about apple trees as well. So that might be a great place to start, is on the ISU Extension website. Let's get to some email questions here. This is from Elaine in Webster City. She says, I had good luck with bulbs in pots in western Washington State. Will that work in Iowa? I live in an apartment with no access to planting in the yard.
Now, when you say bulbs, I'm assuming spring flowering bulbs, and you can force those in pots. But when you do that, you need to expose those bulbs, once they're potted, to temperatures around 40 to 45 degrees for 12 to 16 weeks.
Well, I'm going to guess from this, Richard, that she probably wants them to grow in bulbs outside. Can you just plant them in a pot outside in the fall and leave it on your patio or your balcony or whatever, and they might flower in the spring?
Well, you could put them in pots and leave them outside, but I would probably place the pots in the ground in the fall. The reason being that if you leave those pots above ground level, the potting soil temperatures may get extremely cold, which possibly might damage the bulbs. But if you place them in the ground, that won't happen. Or you could maybe, for example, if you had several pots, put them together and then maybe put some wire fencing around them and then fill that with straw so they have some winter protection. But just don't leave them above ground by themselves.
Okay, because in western Washington State, it probably just didn't get that cold.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
All right.
Not 20 below zero, no.
So that one's not going to work here. Sorry, Elaine. I hope you figure out a workaround. Here are two questions from Annie in Iowa City. One, stink bugs. I've seen a lot more this summer than in the rest of my life combined. Is this a trend?
I really don't know. I haven't heard any reports of those being that bad this year. So hopefully it's just a one-year occurrence.
All right. And here's her second question. What's the best way to bring large houseplants inside for the winter without too many bugs?
I think the best thing to do would be maybe wash them off with a gentle spray of water, where you just bring them to maybe the driveway or someplace and just wash them off very, very carefully. Right before you bring them inside, you may want to spray them with insecticidal soap, and that would kill some of the insects like maybe aphids and spider mites.
All right. This is from Ginny. How late can I plant bare root daylilies?
They're pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if you can get them in the ground by early November, you should be okay.
All right. This one's from Melissa and Marion. Any suggestions about getting thistles out of my garden area? They're intermingled with volunteer milkweed, so I've been hesitant to spray with Roundup. I've been pulling them by hand, but they're hard to keep up with. And pulling doesn't do it, right? You've got to dig them.
Pulling doesn't do it. No, digging doesn't work very well either. What I would be inclined to do is maybe get some stakes and pin back what I want to save with those stakes, and then go out with Roundup. But I would actually pour some Roundup into a small container and then take a foam-type paintbrush, dip it in the Roundup, and then dab it on the actual thistles. So I'm not spraying, because spray can be hard to control. I'm just dabbing it on the thistle, and then as soon as the Roundup dries, I can take away the stakes, and my other plants should be fine.
All right, back to the phone. Stephanie in Des Moines. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have a couple strawberry plants that are in a fairly tall, 2 feet tall, probably 4 foot long planter. And I wonder, this is the first year I've had them in the planter. What do I need to do with them this winter so that they'll stay alive?
So is this a raised bed that's in contact with the soil, or is it completely above ground?
It's completely above ground, a self-standing planter, essentially. That's okay. Pretty big.
Okay. Well, my concern again would be the cold winter temperatures, because it is above ground.
Okay.
And could you set the container on the ground? Is that possible?
The container is on the ground.
Oh, it is on the ground.
And it's sitting on concrete on our driveway.
Okay.
And it's filled, like I said, 2 foot tall with dirt.
Okay.
And the plants are at the top.
Okay. I think what I would maybe try to do would be to maybe get something like some fencing and put that around the area, and maybe put some star leaves in that to maybe moderate the temperatures. But I want to have some material between the actual planter and the fencing.
Okay.
And get ready.
Thank you.
Get ready. You might be purchasing new plants in the spring.
All right. So that it's mm-hmm. iffy.
It's iffy.
It's a good try, but
it's iffy if it gets really cold.
Yeah, the main thing is try to moderate the temperatures within that potting soil or soil. Mm-hmm. And if you have some protective material, maybe some straw, maybe some leaves, that would tend to moderate the temperature so it doesn't get nearly as cold, and that might be sufficient. But if it gets extremely cold, that may damage or destroy the plants.
All right, Stephanie, thanks a lot for your call. Thank you, everybody, for calling and sending your questions. We'll be back on the air with Horticulture Day again next Friday. With me today, Cindy Haynes, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Thank you, Cindy and Richard.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Divine Huff and Jason Burns. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.